Hey everyone, welcome to the Balanced Dietitian Podcast. I am your host, Marie-Pierre, and for all my English friends out there, you can call me Marie. I am a registered dietitian with a background in psychology. My passion in life is to help individuals heal their relationship with food and their bodies. If you're tired of dieting and tired of restriction, you are at the right place. I'm hoping that this podcast will help and support you as you heal your own relationship with food and your body, and give you the tools, the resources, and the knowledge that you need to finally ditch the diets. Every week, you will be hearing from guest experts and myself on all things food, body, and mind. I am so happy that you're here, and I cannot wait to support you on your journey. Let's get started. Hello, 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 everyone. Welcome back to the podcast. I hope that you are doing well wherever you are as you are listening to this podcast episode. So today we have David Bedrick, a psychotherapist, attorney, and author of multiple books, who is here to talk to us about body shame and sexism. This was such a great conversation, and I love the way that David shared all of this through storytelling. So he shares different stories from the different books that he wrote and different people that he was able to support and how this healing process works. He really dives deep into the intersection of trauma, body shame, and sexism and how it keeps us stuck in the diet cycles. I think you will love this episode because I absolutely did. So with no further ado, let's welcome David to the podcast. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Balanced Dietitian Podcast. Today, we have an exciting guest. We have David on the podcast today. Hello, David.
Hey, Mary.
How are you today?
I'm doing well. I was just saying I don't get some sleep sometimes, so I have a little bit of that tiredness, but my energy is really good and excited to be sitting with you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I am so excited that you're here. We have Odin in the background, so we may hear a little bit of dog noises, but that's life right now.
Okay. I can do dog noises if we need to.
Yeah, exactly. All right. I'm really pumped to have you on the podcast. We actually haven't had a lot of males on the podcast. We only had one actually who was my partner. So you're the first other male on the podcast. I think this is really cool to just get different perspectives. But before we get started into the episode, do you want to tell us a little bit more about who you are and what got you to do the work that you do today?
Yeah. There's so many things I can say, but maybe the most fundamental that I don't always share is I'm 65. I grew up in New York in a violent home. My father was brutal with fists and belts, not just a punishment, not that that would be okay, but out of a grown man's rage. And that's a distinction that's important to me. And I had a mother who was incredibly disempowered. And what that meant for me, given my father's violence, is she couldn't do anything or was unable to or unwilling to do anything to prevent that. To not say to my father, no way, you can't treat the children that way. Or even to bear honest witness to me or my brother's harm, meaning to say, I saw what happened, David. I can't stop your father, but I get it. That was big. That's important. Are you okay? She had to be in a state of relative denial about that violence. She had to be. I'm not trying to let either of them off the hook, but that's the psychological condition. So as I grew up, I learned a few different things that became important to me. One was my father's violence and many fathers' violence and patriarchal violence, because the violence my father had wasn't only belonged to that particular father, but he had certain dynamics that would not be only different, even if it wasn't physically violent. And then I learned something about what I call the witness to abuse. My mother was a witness to the abuse, but the way she witnessed, either through denial, right? It didn't really happen, Marie. You're making things up. I didn't see that. You're seeing it all wrong. Or dismissal. it's not that big a deal. You're exaggerating. Maybe you're sensitive, or what we now call gaslighting. You shouldn't have done that. And that wouldn't have, you know, if you, David, you didn't do this, your father wouldn't have lost his temper. Those three factors I've learned, because I've studied them, that people internalize that view of themselves. So then you have the violence, right? The father's fist in this case, or the people's, or the patriarchal violence in the world, or could not only be a parent or a school violence. And then you have the way it's seen, and the way the violence is seen internalizes. And when people internalize that kind of witness, I call that shame, then they start thinking, I didn't get hurt. Marie, did you notice that? Is this a big deal? I know I have bruises on me, but maybe that's not such a big deal. I know I'm feeling lousy today, but nothing's really happening. This, what happens is people start denying and dismissing their own experience. And that's a very powerful dynamic. And in my own therapy, that becomes a very important thing to make sure I do the opposite, bring their experience. I believe you, your story, but in you, if you're having an experience, it must be deep and important to me.
Thank you, first of all, for sharing that with the audience. I think that's so powerful that you're able to share that and that vulnerability too, but also how we learn from that too, right? And how trauma that we have and what we witness also will influence moving forward.
Huge. Yeah. And the importance of the, we call it the perpetrator of violence. But then the important thing that often gets missed is who was there, who wasn't there? What did people do when you told them? How come nobody was there? How come no one noticed all of a sudden you started starving yourself, right? Or eating or wearing different clothes or stop talking or start talking? How come no one noticed a moment when your life started shifting and said, sweetheart, I'm talking to a younger person, what's happening? And became a witness for the experiences people are going through.
Yeah, and that, so powerful. And how, I know we're like getting into your story here, but I think like this is so many gems for a lot of people who are hearing who have this experience of trauma at home. How does that will then influence, like you said, what they eat and what they wear? Like how does that translate to that afterwards? Phew.
In so many, this is like, wow, Marie, I'm embarrassed. I get teary inside because it's so important to me. People can't see, but I'm trying to catch my feelings back again and not lose them because feelings are so important to the territory that us as people who want to educate others, who think we can educate others, don't lose touch with the feeling life. It's so many things. Let me tell a story.
Okay.
Of a woman that I worked with, her story is in the book, and she said to me, I'm struggling, I want my body to be smaller. Many people have that big surprise in a world that has so much sexist, patriarchal gaze looking at the woman's body, saying, and evaluating, critiquing, fixing, changing, deciding whether it's a good one or not, all that, that so many women would have that particular dynamic and struggle. Men also, but women have a special extra potency around that particular problem. So she said she had been trying to change her body shape, eat differently. And I said, when did you start getting bigger? And she said, it was about 2 years ago. And she said, why are you asking? I said, did you know that? She goes, I didn't ever really thought about it. Now that alone is important because somebody's saying, I wonder about you in your life. I don't have a plan to fix you. I want to know you. Just that opening, a person feels, I'm going to call it the evaporation of shame. A person, you want to know who I am? You're not just going to tell me what to do. We were talking before, right? You're not just going to tell me the broccoli diet or the whatever it is. You actually want to know me. So she never thought about that. And then she said, at that time, there was a man she was friendly with in social media. They didn't know each other outside of social media. And he started writing messages to her that were sexual, unconsented, unfriendly, gross, and not consented is the most important thing, right? She didn't say, okay, let's have that conversation. I would love that. She said, yuck, go away. I don't like that. And she said, and that triggered her. And she had some earlier abuse scenes. And I said, what did he say to you? Can you repeat some of those words? And I was on a screen like we're on, and her eyes started glazing over. And I said, how you doing? And she said, my hands are becoming numb. Isn't that powerful? Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, okay, I've done a lot of work and I teach about trauma. I said, can you put your hands together? I'm putting my hands together and touch them, feel them, make contact with them. Let's see if we can bring you back, get you in touch with your feeling body, do something somatic. A lot of times that helps. And I said, is that helping? She said, my feet are becoming numb. That means what I was saying didn't help. She's saying, that doesn't help. It's still, this is still happening. Good idea, David, but not right for her. Again, that means that she's important, not my theory. My theory says, try this. Her body says, no. So I said, what would you do to make yourself feel comfortable? She said, I would go into bed. And we weren't with each other, so this was not that kind of an interaction. And I said, would you want to leave the session and go to bed to take care of yourself? Or would it be okay to imagine going into bed so you can feel what that would be like? Because now consent is so important. She has to make these choices, not me. I can't say, this is good for you, right? And she said, oh, I would like to imagine that. I said, what's it like when you get in bed? This is provocative, so I want to just tell your people about a trigger warning. She said, I'm naked. She wasn't naked with me. She's imagining. And I said, does it feel good to be that way? You're wrapped up in your body in the covers? She said, no. I said, what would you put on? She said, I would like to put on her. I said, go ahead, imagine putting that on. How's that feel? It's not enough. What would you do? I'd put on 3 sweatpants and 3 sweatshirts. Now, how do you feel? I feel safer. Okay. This gives me the chills just to share that. What's important about that? Can you see how she's trying and needing to be bigger and safer in her own body? She's in her way of living, eating and otherwise. She says, my body needs 3 sweatshirts for me to feel safe in the world. Mm-hmm. Now, if I miss that, then I think, why don't you just lose weight? I don't know there's a person with a story who's doing something so meaningful to themselves. She doesn't need help to lose weight, so to speak. She needs somebody to bear witness to a story, a trauma story. Somebody who can hear her say, I don't feel safe in the world, David. That's what I'm needing help with. It looks like a weight problem. But really, my weight is the most intelligent thing in me. It's saying, please help me. I have a story. I don't even know that yet, but I need layers around me to make me feel safer in the world as a woman in this case. Mm,
such a powerful story. And like, what the best way to describe how trauma and disordered eating, trauma and body image is so interconnected.
Yeah.
Right? We can show our pain or we can want to hide through our physical body.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's just like unpacking all of that.
Yes.
That is such a, mm-hmm. such an impactful story.
Yeah.
And for you, like from your childhood, what you've been through, how did that evolve for you that you started to want to do this work? Or how was then your teenage years moving through the world as you did?
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure why this happened. I have a Jewish background. That's part of the sense of, for some Jews, there's a sense that the other is important. The sense of, we used to say on Passover, I'm not a major practicer of the religion, but I know something about it in my bones. But we used to say, you were once enslaved, other people too. Remember that there's others. So I always got interested when I was a younger person in African-American stories, women's stories, Palestinian stories, Eastern European stories. I wanted to know about different people and what they went through and how I could learn from them. So I started becoming much more activist as a young person, fighting with my father about racism, fighting my father about how he treated my mother. You know, I didn't think the word sexism at that point. I just was a boy who didn't like the way my mother was treated and felt protective of her. I was a boy. I couldn't really do that job. I understand that, but that sensibility was in me, that a big grown person was scaring a smaller, less powerful person, not just a child. So over the years, I just became more interested and I wanted to learn more. So I started working with people, interviewing people, doing race conflict work in different places, doing work around Jews and Holocaust in Germany and Poland, being interested in women's experiences. So that started happening. It was a learning thing. Like, what's it like to be you, Marie? I don't know you as a woman person, as your background person. What is it like being you? So I started interviewing people as a way of learning. What's it like being you? Well, that person, this woman wants to lose weight and thinks she should. Wonder what's going on inside of her. Not meaning she screwed up. I wonder what that experience is like. What's happening? And then people, if you ask them as if you believe, as if is the wrong word, with a genuine belief in them and their intelligence, that there's something meaningful happening, even when it looks crazy or wrong to people, you find out amazing things.
Mm-hmm. Your approach feels like so, like, I feel like I can breathe. Like, it feels so light and empathetic. And it's not this like one approach for all, or just trying to like label people with like, well, this is you, this is you. It's like, I don't know what's you. Like, let's learn together. And like, you know, I want to be here and be along this journey with you, instead of here's what I'm going to tell you to do because me, I know, right? Yeah. Like, it's very different, very wonderful, because not a lot of people practice this way.
Yeah. That's gorgeous. You're saying two things that touch me. One is you said, I can breathe. And I saw you, people can't see. I saw you put your hand up towards your breathing lungs area and take a big inhale. And I'm like, oh, that's such a, it's such a touching and gorgeous thing when a person feels like they can breathe, you know, in the atmosphere. I said to you at the beginning when we first met, oh, what a lovely person. I feel really good. It's a feeling thing. It's a feeling thing in the body. Oh, I'm somewhere, we could call that safe or at home or easy or lighthearted or something like that. It lets vulnerability happen, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the other thing, now you make me want to tell another story about the intelligence around eating and bodies, but did you want to say something first or ask something?
No, go ahead. Like, okay. you're leading this conversation beautifully. Like, I'm all here for it.
Okay. So another woman who's in my book and is part of the study I did a study about asking people what it's like to wish their body were different. I call that body shame. Some people also call that body shame. And I was like, I wanted to know more of what that was like. I was teaching at university and people started writing papers about that. Longer story about how that happened. And I became interested in that. And it started, whenever I get interested in people, I think, can I interview you? You know, and then if I get interested in an interview, I think, can I interview 10 people? Can I interview 20 people? So that's what started happening with the stories. They weren't originally meant for just women. It's just when I put up my sheet of paper at the university and said, who wants to participate about in a study about body and liking and not liking their body? Da, da, da. 21 people first signed up. They were all women. Now, maybe I could have framed it differently. I didn't say I'm focusing on women, but that alone is telltale, isn't it? That's already a huge piece of information. So one woman said to me, she was diabetic, partially diabetic. Her mother was diabetic. Her grandmother was diabetic. And she needed to do something about her eating habits because it could be unhealthy for her. And I said, have you tried different strategies? And all the, you know, she said, I've tried more strategies than you can think of, David, right? You know, and if you Google things like, you know, that diet, weight loss, you'll find like 10,000 pages of search things. Almost none of them will talk about abuse. Almost none of them about sexism. Almost none of them are going to talk about resistance to dieting and why. So that's fascinating to me already. That's painful to me. That means there's a lot of suggestions coming without that curiosity you're saying. Tell me about you. Before I lay something on you, maybe you have an idea. So this woman said, yeah, I tried tons of things. She said, sometimes they work for a little while. And then she smiled. And I said, why do you smile? She said, here's the funny thing that I don't want to admit to people. As soon as I decide I'm going to go on a diet, I go to the store and buy sweets and chocolate. Mm-hmm. And I said, chocolate? And she says, I don't even like chocolate. Okay, now from a mainstreamish kind of thinking, you think, that's crazy. She's sabotaging herself. What kind of, how do you get her over eating chocolate? It's just hurting her. She's physically needing health issues. She wants to make changes. What's going on? But I think, Marie, I wonder what she's doing. I wonder what intelligence is informing her action, leading her to go buy chocolate, given that she doesn't even like chocolate. And the answer is, I don't know. I have to inquire. So I said to her, let's have a debate. I'm going to be a diet program. You should drink more water, eat more salads, don't eat chocolate. Right? That's her thinking. And yeah. I said, and I want you to argue for eating chocolate. Well, why would I do that? It's bad. Because something in you is eating chocolate, right? That's its decision. Right? I say to Marie, don't do this and you go do it. Right? So what's happening there? So she says, okay. So I said, drink more water. She says, I'm going to eat chocolate. I said, eat more salads. She said, and we're playing. And she says, I'm going to eat more chocolate. And we go on like this for a few minutes. And I said, you have to do what I want you to do. If you're going to get better, you have to do what I want you to do. She says, no. I said, what do you mean no? She says, no. And she gets very passionate and excited. This role play becomes very real. Her no sounds like she means it. And I said, what's so good about saying no? And she gets teary, Marie. She says, I never get to say no. Mm-hmm. Wow. Wow. She's a single mom. Can't say no to at work easily. She can because she can't afford to lose her job. Her kids don't have a father around. She wants to be extra careful about making sure they have things and she's good to them. She doesn't want to say no to them. You hear the gender issue because she's a woman. You should be smaller. You hear the single mother part. You hear the empowerment. Can I say no as a person, but as a woman person, given these things? That no is such so important to her. So she's telling me, David, help me say no. I'm practicing it. It's better for me to eat something I don't like as long as I can say no, screw you, diet. Screw you, whoever. Screw you, people who think I should be smaller. Screw you, people who think I'm not attractive. She has a big no, a screw you in her. She wanted, her system says, empower me. Help me with my no. Don't shrink me and make me smaller and teach me how to follow rules and then call me self-sabotaging. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, that is so powerful. Like digging deeper to understand. So it does sound, and I know this because I know a little bit about you, but for our audience, like it does sound like you're not into diet culture, which mm-hmm. I mean, we've talked on this podcast so much about diet culture, understanding what it is.
Yes.
Often, it's hard to get on this side of anti-diet, right? Because you're born just, and you're taught from a really young age that diet is what it is and the female thin ideal. Mm-hmm. How did that look like for you that you were like, wait, no, like this does not align and the thin ideal may not be the ideal that we should all mm-hmm. women look for. Like, mm-hmm. how was that for you? Like, how was that switch made that you were like, I don't believe in diets and I don't think women should always be trying to be their thinnest self. Like,
yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that transition.
Yeah. Women taught me. They told me their stories and I learned. I read lots of research. One piece of research is 95% of the people who diet don't lose sustainable weight. They either go up and back or they don't lose at all. So then you have to think, 95% of the people have something wrong with them or screwed up or not disciplined, or you have to think people are doing something meaningful, right? If we came up with a vaccine, we don't have to be pro or negative vaccine. If we came up with a vaccine and I said, 50% of the people will not get helped by this, 45% of the people will feel worse by it, and 5% of the people will get helped, you would think that's a really bad vaccine. Throw that thing in the garbage. That's diet programs.
100%. Mm-hmm.
And then people feel like, not only do I feel bad about myself and my body and my eating habits, but now I feel like a failure for not going on with something. And shame is so potent because it says the reason why things aren't going the way they should be, the way you want them to be, the way the norm is, the way people would like it to go for you, is because you're screwed up and you're messed up and you're undisciplined. And it's not because there's something going on in you that wants to express its power, that wants to say, that expresses intelligence, that wants to resist conforming. All these powerful, incredible forces in people, especially in women around this issue, come up against the forces of the dieting, not going along with it. The self-love in the 21 women that I originally started with, I've worked with tons more since and added more to my research. In the women I've worked with and studied, almost all of them resisted dieting, not because they hated themselves, but because that resistance had a power in it that they needed. In a sense, saying, screw you, I won't go along with a program, was a self-love thing. It looked like I'm hating myself by doing it, It doesn't mean people can't change, but first you have to own the power, the story, the violence, the beauty that you have inside. Then you can decide to consent or not consent, right? To an ideal that may not fit you.
Yeah, I love that so much. Let's start talking about body shame. And what is body shame? Where does it come from? But I'd love for you to touch on and how is it linked to sexism? Because I think this is a different view that not a lot of people are able to bring together. So I think this is really interesting.
Yeah. Body shame is...
a loaded question, eh?
It's a great question. I love it. Body shame. Imagine this, I say to people. Imagine, I have my hand up by my head. Imagine a lens, an eye, a person, a lens that's looking at you, a set of eyes that are looking at you. And those eyes are evaluating, critiquing, objectifying, measuring, deciding you should change, telling you how you should be different, giving opinions about how you look all the time. Opinions, not blessing, not, oh, you're beautiful, or how you're feeling today, but opinions. This is how you look. This is what's good. This is not good. Your arms are like this. Your eyes are like this. Your belly's more like this. Your arms are like this. You're getting older. You're getting wrinkles. Imagine having that set of eyes around, which people do in the outer world. We know magazines and et cetera, but most of us have internalized that, right? By 10 years old, 80% of girls are managing their body weight, regardless of whether they're heavy and according to any index or not, are managing. That means girls at that age think being heavy is worse than getting cancer, having their parents get divorced. This is research about that. Think about that particular pressure, such that people are already managing that. Now that person has that set of eyes critiquing them, right? Imagine, Marie, if... I would never do this, right? If some guy, not me, would sit around and say to you, you should do this, you should do that. You know, your hair doesn't really look good. You know, really this, you know, you're gaining a little weight. You shouldn't have had that ice cream last night, constantly. Now, imagine if I could stand there in front of you and critique you like that, as violently, brutally, grossly. You would kind of say, David, get the F out of here, right? I hate your, right? If you had some power, right? If you weren't so internally shamed, you would say, I don't like this guy. And if your friends were around, they'd say, why do you hang around with him? He's an a-hole. That guy's a jerk. He's a sexist pig, they would say. I can't believe you, right? But that goes on all the time in the culture and then inside. And no one says, get that thing out of here. Even inside, people say, oh, it's true. Maybe I should change. And no one says, ouch.
Yeah.
Because if I criticize you, like if you criticize me and said, David, I have a beard, your beard is getting gray. You know what? Maybe you should have worn a different shirt today. If I were free, I might not be, because I might be too shy and I don't know you very well. But if I'd free, I'd say, ow, hey, this kind of hurts. Or I'd want to fight you. I'd want to say, hey, knock it off. You know, I don't want to be criticized. But I would hurt afterwards. And because people don't fight back, they don't know they have that power in them to say, that doesn't feel good. I don't like that. Mm-hmm. And don't say, ouch, I'm hurting. At the end of the day, with that criticism, that's called shame. I don't know my own experience about that.
Yeah, I love the way that you put it. So it's like the internalization of all the things we've been told our body should be and how it's never enough, basically, right? The system of belief that diet culture has, that is it into our society that makes us believe that like you're just not enough. And then we internalize that and then start to have that shame around our body.
Then if you believe the voice that says, Marie, you really should be, let me tell you what you should do. You know, do this, eat that, exercise. If you really believe that me, this critical me, right? This one is like, you should do this. You know, this is how attractive you are. This is how attractive. Let me compare you to these other three women and tell you where you stand. This is what's going on all the time. If you really believed me and thought, wow, I really have to take in what David's saying. I don't think you would. I think you would throw me off your show, right? We'll make a model example of what people are, what guys are like sometimes, right? But if you believe that, and that sent you to a program to try to conform to my view, as soon as you started feeling good about yourself, maybe you would lose weight, maybe not, maybe some friends would start loving you more anyway, because they got to meet you. As soon as you start feeling better, you would come back to me and say, you know what, David, I went to this program because you put me down so much and I was trying to win your approval and fit into your and conform to your thing. But now that I feel better about myself, you're out of here. That's what happens. That's the shame operating. And then the freedom from the shame is to resist the program. Isn't that funny? You'd say, and I'm throwing you out, and I'm throwing out the program I went on because of you, David. And maybe I'll do something, maybe not in the future. But it's not going to be because to win your approval, to get out of your critical gaze. I want to deal with your critical gaze by either punching you, making a boundary, right? Or finding people around who aren't like you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So it sounds, it's like, it's like rejecting this idea that diet culture has like put on us, that we have to be XYZ way. And it's like letting go of that external view and just like connecting within, being like, what do I want? What do I need? Which are hard questions to ask, I think, for a lot of women and men who never asked themselves, because there's always been told all the shoulds that they should do.
Exactly. And if you resist, now we bring in more of the sexism stuff. If you resist, if you say, look, I'm not interested in your critique, you know, keep your stuff to yourself, back off. One more comment, you know, whatever, you're in the doghouse, dear partner. If you resist, then you look like a woman who has some power in her, not just any person, but a woman who has some power. And for many women, showing that kind of power, the no in that early stories, that this is my trauma and this is what's going on, exposing that, or resisting those things outwardly, or saying, this is how I'm going to look. I don't have to please some male gaze. This is how I'm going to look for myself. That's a force against that patriarchal gaze, against the sexist culture. That takes some power. And many women are getting bigger in their bodies as a way of saying, screw you, culture, I'll look how I want. Or I'd like to feel safer in more my body. Or actually, I'm going to start taking up more space. I know I'm a woman. I should just listen to you, David, and listen to the teachers and listen to the male authorities and keep myself quiet and demure and small. But actually, I take up a lot of space. And that's going to be in my body. And then it's going to be in my voice. And then it's going to be in the intelligence. And then it's going to be in my ability to make relationships in deeper ways. I'm going to expand myself, not shrink myself.
Yeah. And I love that, because not a lot of people will talk about weight gain in such a positive light, to be like, actually, it's not a bad thing. It can be an empowering thing. It can't just be what it meant to be, and doesn't need to be anything negative at all. Mm-hmm. Right. And if you talk a little bit about that, like sexism lens, like you talk a lot about like the patriarchy. Oh my God, my French sucks. I cannot pronounce that, that word to save my life. The patriarchy, you talk a lot about that in terms of like, well, diet culture is kind of stemmed in patriarchy and sexism and racism. But how does that impact like women on day to day when it comes to their body shame, when we think of like the sexism in our culture today?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's so much. There's momentary experience. I get up. Should I put on stripes going down, or should I have stripes or going across? Because one's going to make me look one way. One's going to make me look another. When I look in the mirror, am I going to see a person tired or awake or this, that? Or am I going to have evaluative eyes that decide whether I'm going to feel good today or not? Or I'm going to get on the scale. I'm going to put on clothes. But I got to tell you another story that's in my book. It's a woman who, when she was young, she had siblings, brothers, and who were also a little bit big, but she was critiqued by her father in front of the father's friends. Yeah, that's my chunky daughter. He called her chunky, right? She's like 6'7". She like felt like many girls would be like embarrassed, humiliated in front of the other people who were there, etc. But she was big and she was strong, but she grew up, didn't do that to the boys. Boys were same size, bigger, whatever. But she got that particular thing because, you know, because she's a girl person, quote unquote. And that means we should start training her. I'm being facetious, right? Start training her early to not be big in body, but listen to the message. Don't be too big. Be smaller. Be smaller. In general, forget about just the body. So, and then she struggled in her life because she had a bigness in her. She wanted to take on big things, big agendas. She had a big voice. She was like 5'10 and wore heels and was, I'm like 5'8". She was bigger than me. She was broader than me. She was strong. So she didn't know what to do with all that strength in her. So she went into the military. So she goes into the military and she can do all the things the guys do. She could move these tires. I can't remember what they were. These huge tires that they give you one of these tests. It's like they're huge and heavy. Had to run, do all these tests. She could do all the stuff that guys could do, all the running, all the physical stuff, but they would do something called tape testing. So they would take a measuring tape, and she said, and they'd wrap it around my belly and my butt, she said. And they said, sorry, you're too big. you have to go to what she called that camp in the military, right? It wasn't because she was unable. So she goes there. And then what she would do, and many women would do, listen to this. Do you know what Preparation H is?
No.
It's this cream that shrinks hemorrhoids.
Okay.
So people use the shrink. She would get this stuff, coat her butt and thighs in this stuff, wrap it in cellophane wrap, saran wrap, and sleep at night because it would shrink the tissue a little bit so that when she'd go to the tape testing, right, she would fit into that size. That's the kind of mentality that she learned as a kid. Can't you be smaller? Now she goes into the military. They don't tell guys they don't measure the guys. They measure the women, right? So you have sexism in there. And now she's going through these extraordinary measures. Other people go through extraordinary measures, maybe not that exact measure, but people starving themselves, people taking amphetamines, which she would do also. So she was doing all these different things to make herself smaller. And when we were working together in the study, she said to me, I'm always trying to do bigger things. And I said, isn't that great? She goes, no, I should be smaller. I should be smaller. And I said, what would be the big thing you would do if you didn't try to be smaller? She said, I would become a firewoman. A year later, she became a firewoman and she loved it. Now think of that implication. If she kept that mentality of I should be smaller, she learned as a kid in the military and other places, amplified that message, gave her that message back. Now, one of the implications for her life that you're asking about is she start living a smaller life. I won't do too much. I won't go be a firewoman. I won't become an EMT. She became an EMT. I won't go into the military. I won't take on big tasks. I won't address big issues in the world. I'll just shrink myself and be smaller. So the smallness mentality doesn't only affect people making their bodies smaller. They start making their lives smaller. Mm-hmm. And that's not good for anybody.
I love that you shared that story, because that's the truth for many, that when we spend so much of our brain space thinking about food, thinking about our body, trying to shrink, trying to be attractive, trying to be flattering, all these things that we're told as women you should do, it takes a lot of space to not be able to do the rest of the things that you're actually meant to do. So that body shame piece can, like, I see almost like this iceberg that just kind of goes into so many other areas of your life. Because when you're not feeling good and never feeling enough, like, it's hard to really show up.
Isn't that incredible? There's studies done about that. Like if a person feels shame about their body, their eye-hand coordination is less. They're less likely to speak up in class and say, I know the answer to the math problem. What does that have to do? Well, you and your audience know that. If I'm feeling unwell at myself, I don't want to be seen. And I'm in an inner experience that has an anxiousness and unhappiness or a depression or whatever, or stress, various kinds of things that take up so much psychic space. So rather than learning poetry or saying, dumping that relationship with that person I can't stand and using my forces that way, then all that conflict, all that power, all that difficulty is internal. The person becomes in a fight with their body. There's a lot of good things to fight with, by the way, you know, sometimes the body, but usually there's a lot of things in the world to fight with that are really worthy to take on other than a self-hatred, a self-shaming program.
Yeah, 100%. So we know that diets don't work. We have evidence, we have science, we have stats, and yet so many people are finding themselves stuck in this cycle and stuck in the cycle of wanting their body to be different, to be smaller, to be attractive.
So painful.
To feel like they belong, right? To feel like they're okay. I feel like it's, you know, we understand why it happens because the pain of feeling like we're inadequate is so, so high. But what can we, I don't know, leave the audience with, or what would you say to someone to start moving away from this shame cycle and really reconnecting with ourselves?
I love the way you said that, by the way. That was incredible. Yeah. That feeling about ourselves and how powerful it is. And if I grew up with in a system that made me feel really bad about myself, the way I look, the way I act, whether I'm stupid or whatever it's going to be, or all those things, or I'm not disciplined or I'm weird. If I grew up in a system and it really inculcated that in me, unless I fight that off, I become very easy to manipulate, seduce into all kinds of things, whether it's weight loss programs, whether it's healing programs, whether it's anything. I'll give myself to anything because that pain, the suffering of not liking myself and feeling so unliked, unloved, is so huge that I'll jump through a lot of hoops with the promise, I'm putting quotes around that because the promise may not deliver, of doing that. If somebody came to me and said, what do I do though? I want to feel better about myself. If someone said it that clearly, Marie, I would say, tell me, I would love to help you feel better about yourself. I'm not against you doing any program you want to do, but first tell me more about what it's like to not feel good about yourself. Because you're saying, I don't feel good about myself. So let's start at the very beginning for you. For you, it's, I don't feel good about myself. I don't really know what that's like for you, but I want to know what it's like for you. Could you share, what do you mean you don't feel good about yourself? Is it a momentary experience? And then what does it feel like in your feeling body somatically? Is it a sinking feeling? Is it a self-beating up feeling that's going on inside of you? Is there internalized oppression? For me to get to know that experience, because once a person begins to say something like, I don't feel good about myself, taking genuine interest in that experience before I recommend, do this, do that, taking genuine interest is so powerful because most people don't have that fundamental experience. Oh, you feel bad about yourself? What's it like? Do you want to hide somewhere? Are you black and blue inside yourself? Are you furious somewhere? Are you on the ground and can't get up? It's like a big weight on top of you. People say those kinds of things to me. And once people start sharing the intimacy of that experience, and somebody cares and listens and doesn't offer a suggestion, says, I really want to know, how heavy is that weight on you? Is it 10 pounds? Is it 50 pounds? Is it so big you could never get up? Do you not want to live? It's so bad. Once somebody, and people say those things to me, I don't want to live anymore. If I can hear that and be moved, care, genuinely have my heart say, oh my gosh, that's what's going on for you. Something starts to change inside the person because shame is not entering. I'm not saying, let's fix you. I'm saying, I want to know you. And that's profound. Then all kinds of possible solutions can come up. But the beginning has to be, can I know something about you, your story, your experience? Because shame doesn't care about your experience or your story or your truth. Shame has an opinion, and that's all. Well, let me tell you what you should do about that. Let me tell you my opinion. No, that shirt looks terrible. Don't wear it. You know, it's just an opinion. It doesn't say, why do you want to wear that shirt? What's it like wearing that shirt? It doesn't ask a single question.
Yeah. This is literally the best answer I've ever gotten on the podcast. Where it's,
oh, wow. Really, thank you.
It's really just about the person asking and understanding of like, how's it feel like for you right now? And how would you want it to feel, right? Because we can't even say, like, there's no one answer. And I know like some people in podcasts are like, but what is the tool? What is the first step that I need to do? Like people like to have those lists because we've been trained to want to have structure. Mm-hmm. But what's more powerful is the understanding and having someone there with you to be like, hey, I hear you and I'm here with you and it's really hard.
Yeah.
And we're going to get through this together, which is so cool. And also I don't know if you do this on purpose. If you know, I love how your shame voice is like this deep,
messy. You're a terrible human being.
That's awesome. Like you have such a compassionate voice and then you're like, and here we go. Like,
I once in the book, I you're laughing. I know. Well, but you're learning something about me that I don't always share. I really love play. And when I work with people, if they're open to playing, it helps because we can get past things. Okay, I'll criticize you. You're going to wear those shoes. I won't let you out of the house. How many French fries are you going to eat? You ate three. And because you dramatize these things, because that's what's going on inside people's heads, right? So if we dramatize.
I love that so much. That's so wonderful.
But I once in the book, is a story of a woman. Maybe there'll be time for your thing for it. A woman of color. She was an African-American woman. And I could tell a lot of story about her, but I'll tell you this one piece relevant to wanting to be different. While we were talking, she said, I got to tell you one thing that I'm really embarrassed to say. And I said, what's that? She said, she's a Black woman. And she says, sometimes I wish I were thin and white. Mm. Now, I can't hear that statement as a awake person and not want to scream and cry because it's so painful to hear that she doesn't want to be herself. Right. And that's true for almost all of us. She wouldn't have to be Black to have that experience. It just highlights that particular mm-hmm. experience. And I thought, and she was very knowledgeable. So she knows about internalized racism and sexism, why she would have a view of herself that way. That's why she was embarrassed to say, I've done all this education. Why do I still think that? And because of my curiosity, I said, what would be so good about being thin and white in her mind? Right? Because she's saying, I wish I were that. And she said, people would open doors for me. Hmm. She said, not just literal doors, but doors to opportunities. Mm-hmm. And then she started crying. And I said, why are you crying? And she said, you don't hurt things that are beautiful. Mm-hmm. Meaning, if people saw me as beautiful, now people hurt white women also anyway, right? But this is her psychological perspective. She's saying, if people saw me as beautiful, they wouldn't hurt me. I'd be more protected physically. Oh, that's a pretty woman. She's thin and white. Let's make sure she, how you, dear friend, dear woman, is there anything I can do for you? Here, let me walk you to your car. But for her experience, right? There's a world that doesn't see her as beautiful. Why protect her? Why make her feel safer? And I said to her, if you were protected, if you were safer, if this fantasy, imagination you're having, I could be thin and white, would come true, and you got doors opening and you were protected, what would be life be like for you? What would you be like? And I thought, Marie, she was going to say, I would speak up more and I would tell people about their racism and I confront people. And she said, you want to know what would come out of me? I said, I do. She said, my love. I have a lot of love in me, but I feel so unsafe, I can't let it out. Oh. Wow. I could never, now no theory in my that I've read, and I've read a lot of psychology and taught psychology for many years, nothing I've read would ever have showed me that, taught me that lesson. Mm-hmm. You don't hurt things that are beautiful. If I felt safer in the world, my love would come out. Yeah. Wow.
Oh, that is so powerful. And I feel like this ties well, really well with this last question that I have for you. This you being anti-diet, weight inclusive, working on these systems of oppressions, like, how does that tie in into the social justice piece? That's so very important.
Yeah. The more empowered a person is, in this case, a woman, more a woman knows that her body is a location for violence and abuse, outer and inner, not only, also for celebration and love and tenderness and sensuality, but often a site, a location for harm and dismissal and denial and objectification. The more a woman is in touch with that and her connection with how she's going to deal with her body, the more she's going to become a social agent in two ways. One, she's going to be more empowered in herself. That means she's going to take on social issues in smaller ways all the time. People are going to leave relationships. I don't want to live with this guy anymore. I don't like the way it feels. These are not people I want to hang around with. So in their intimate life, they'll start being unhappy with certain people. They'll start showing up differently. That has an impact on the social world. And then the more likely some of those women will start saying, wow, you know the same story. I want to listen to Marie's podcast. She's talking about this also. There's books about this. There's books about body shame, many different things about that. I think I'm interested in gender as an issue. I think I want to support other women. Not all women, is that the right thing for? But some women will say, I think I want to take some of that energy because it doesn't, that my fight against that inside doesn't only belong to me. It belongs to many women who could use that and then become more social agents in that way.
I love that so much because it's so important, right? Because we know that it is a system of oppression and nobody wins. Nobody wins in a system of oppression.
Yeah. The diet industry wins. $70 billion, 5% effectiveness.
True. I mean, as individuals, we can make such a big shift in the culture. Like, we as people are the culture. So the more of us that do this work, the more people who are in Tiger Spirit, I think it's going to be make such a big difference. And I think you make such a big difference in this world. And thank you so much for all that you do.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a special thing as a man to enter the topic. I know that some women say to me, why would I ever listen to a guy about this? And I say, maybe you shouldn't. You know, and I don't mean that as a dismissal of me. I mean, because it's a valid hesitancy that some women would say, I don't know that having a male voice that's resonant with a patriarchal voice that's already hurting me, I might need distance from that. So I just want to say that also. But my job in this area was not to be an expert. It was to learn from women and share their stories and then share what I learned from those women. But this is, I just want to say, the intelligence that I have. I mean, I have my own intelligence. I like my intelligence. I have my intelligence that would study and know how to study and know how to ask the right questions to get something, and my interest in social issues. But the knowledge I have about this territory, the resistances, the sexism, the trauma, the racism, came because women told me these things. Once I said, I want to listen to you and I believe in you.
Oh. So where can people find you and work with you and learn more about you? You also have a book. So let's talk about it, and everything will be linked in the show notes.
Okay. The book is called You Can't Judge a Body by Its Cover, 17 Women's Stories of Hunger, Body Shame, and Redemption. There's a beginning theory, but then there's one chapter per woman. Basically, these women said, I would be happy to be interviewed by you, David, like a psychological interview, so we can go deep into things. And then you could use my transcripts as long as you don't use my name. And I want to contribute to women's intelligence and in this way. And anyway, so all the women consented verbally and then in writing so that I'm not misusing anybody's stories. So there are 17 stories. And basically it's almost like sitting in on a therapy session, just like you were hearing my stories here, of listening to what I'm asking and then what they're telling me and then the insights that they gather as in this conversation. It's like, oh my gosh, oh, there's trauma in this. So it's a 15-year project to write that book. I did the research and I didn't think I would write a book. I wrote some chapters in a bunch of different books, and then Psychology Today, I wrote a number of different essays for them on the issue. And I thought, I don't have to write this book. It's not my issue. I don't have to write this book. But women kept on asking about the stories. And then something inside me was like, you know, you have all this information. You've got to put it somewhere, David, you know?
Yeah, and that is so awesome. Like the power of storytelling. And like, it's such healing as a community to hear other people going through this and their healing ways. And then you're like, man, I can do this too.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
Yeah. People can find me on Facebook under my name, David Bedrick, BEDRICK, like Bed and Rick. And then people could find me on a website that's davidbedrick.com. So, and I have courses and classes. Some of them are very inexpensive so that people can get lots of stuff. And some of them are like for coaches who want to learn more about the techniques. And those are pricier because they're helping people, you know, develop careers and things like that.
That is so wonderful. Everything will be linked in the show notes, so everybody who listens can go learn more about you, because the way that you share, the way that you teach, the way that you're just so empathetic, people need more of you in their lives. Yeah.
Thank you. If anybody says, I don't know if I think it's like there are print copies in Canada and there's Kindle copies, and many bookstores have the book. Some libraries will have the book. I don't remember what it's like. $10 or something on Kindle. But if anybody said, I just can't really afford that, then you write to me, I'll send you a digital copy. Because it took a long time to get the information and I really wanted to get out to people. So if somebody wrote to me and said, could you please send me a digital copy? You don't have to give me your financial situation. I'll make sure you have one. Yeah.
That is so kind of you. All right, so let's finish with our fun questions. The first one is, what is your favorite food?
My favorite food. Well, today it changes. Today it's pasta because sometimes I make my own and I really like the chewy pasta. And I just bought a big hunk of fresh basil and I love making pesto, which is ground down basil and pine nuts and garlic and olive oil. And so that's what's on my mind today.
That sounds like the best.
Yeah.
If you could have a superpower, what would it be?
Wow. Wow. I think if I shouldn't even say this. I think I would change into different identities. I think I would become, you know, because I'm interested in the, as a Jewish person, in the Palestinian Israeli conflict, and I'm pained. This is my politics now. It doesn't, people may not have the same. I'm very sympathetic with Israel and the Jewish people and the need for a safe place, but I'm very pained about the Palestinian condition and the way Israel has misused her power, in my view. So that's a political thing. People would not agree, but I would love to become Palestinian for a little while and a Brazilian woman for a while. And just because I like the empathy, but then there's such intelligence in people that you get once you live inside their world. So not only the empathy for the difficulties, but people know things. Diverse, if you lived in a diverse world, if you're queer, you're going to know something. You're going to learn something about what it means to come out when you don't have to, and what it's like to feel environments that you don't belong in. People and women know things that men wouldn't necessarily, unless some men get educated. Men know things. So I just love the intelligence that people bring forward.
I love that so much. What a cool superpower.
I never thought of that before, but that's, yeah.
That's a cool one. That's a really cool one. What is your favorite way to self-care?
Music is my number one go-to. I usually listen an hour and a half in with headphones and blocked out for the world a day. Sometimes things that I already know, but I try to listen to something new. Lately, it's been reggae music. Sometimes it's jazz. Jazz is always around for me. Lately, I've been listening to reggae music because I like the freedom song, the redemption song, Bob Marley would say. So listening to music is great.
I love that. And then last question for you, because this is the Balanced Dietitian podcast. What does balance mean to you?
Wow. You're awesome, by the way.
Your
intelligence, your way of thinking, and your activism by bringing forward your point of view and making a soup where people can stew in an environment where people can cook, you know, themselves and their issues in a way that brings awareness and more self-love. I just want to say that I'm just touched by that. Now I forgot your question. I was moved by the way you were approaching me and the questions that you asked, which was so different.
I was asking, what does balance mean to you? Yeah. And thank you, by the way, that's very kind.
Yeah. Some people think of balance as a happy medium. So they're not doing too much of one and too much of the other. I don't think that way because my own personality has a lot of extremes to it. I love quiet, and sometimes I need days or weeks of like not talking to people. And I'm incredibly introverted, and I love being out and really intelligent, passionate about what's on my mind. So I go through stages of like one way, way out, and then I get fully exhausted. I have to like totally contract. And so I tend to move across a wider range of that spectrum. A lot of people have more extremes in them that they try to balance out. It can be helpful. I understand why. I'm more likely to have very little sleep for a bunch of days and then crash. And some people say, wouldn't that be better if it was more moderate? But it's not me. It may be better, but David is more the kind of person who would push himself and then collapse. And as long as I can enjoy the collapse and enjoy the push, they sort of balance each other out in a longer term picture, I guess.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. I love that. So it's just like balance is so personal. It's going to look so different for you than it does for me, but it's all our own balance of what we like and how we want it to be. It's all internal. It's coming from those internal cues.
You got to find your own thing. Some people are much more like be moderate and even keeled. And some people are more like, you know, wild, and then they want to calm down, or they like to dive into something and really absorb it and get passionate about it and then say that's enough of it. So,
yeah. I love that. I loved having you on the podcast. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Marie.
For your time, sharing your genius with us, sharing your stories with us. Mm. You are so incredible, and I'm really grateful to have had this opportunity to connect with you.
Thank you, Marie. It's really special. I'm smiling. You're smiling. I'm smiling. I'm like, wow, what a beautiful opportunity to to sit with you independent of sharing the common interest and hopefully offering something that's good food, good nourishment for people.
Wasn't this episode so wonderful? I feel like even for myself going, like talking with David, there's so many times through the podcast, I was just like breathing so deeply. His compassion and his empathy really came across, and his realness really made it feel really safe. So I hope that you really enjoyed this podcast. If you are going through a hard time through your own relationship to food, your own relationship to your body, and you're feeling ready to take that next step, do not hesitate to connect. I would be really, really happy to support you through this journey. It's not an easy journey, right? To start letting go of all the external messages we've heard and internalized messages. However, it is one of the best journey that you can be on, because the journey to reconnecting to yourself, to your body, to the experience of food will last you forever, but will also allow you to really show up in your life. So if you are wanting to look out for help, go check out www.thebalancedpractice.com/services. So we offer one-on-one counseling through nutrition and therapy, as well as a group program to support you through your healing. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and I will catch you in the next one.